This free program is paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a member, think about joining with us to help keep free speech alive.
Delegates to the local station board, I'm KPFT Program Director Ernesto Aguilar, and I'm proud to announce our candidate on-air forums. KPFT is hosting these on-air forums for you to get to know the candidates, ask questions, and prepare to vote. Your ballot will soon be in the mail. The second and final round of forums starts Thursday, October 18th, and ends Sunday, October 21st. All forums happen at 6 p.m. KPFT's regular programming will be preempted during these sessions. For more details on the election, visit kpft.org. Again, tune in for the local station board candidate forums Thursday, October 18th to Sunday, October 21st. All sessions happen at 6 p.m. This series of forums is moderated by KPFT News anchor Steve Jolly. KPFT News can be heard weekdays at 5 p.m. KPFT, Houston.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Falinski.
And this is the queer voice of Deborah Bell.
The very queer voice. This is J.D. Doyle.
And I'm Glenn Holt.
On tonight's show, we're going to be talking about the GLBT Behavior Health and Wellness Coalition. There's a town hall meeting, and we're going to be discussing that. It's happening at the Montrose Counseling Center. Also, Deborah, you're going to be talking to
Madeline Sklar of Go Girls. She does a lot of different concerts and fundraisers. She's going to have one coming up November 3rd at Last Concert Cafe, and that's a benefit for Friends for Life. And also with us will be Celeste Shuttlesworth, who's the director of the shelter, and will talk to us about the work that they do there.
And I was given the assignment to talk to Wayne Benson. Is it Benson?
Mm-hmm.
In his latest book, and it's all about the XX gays or X gays, and it sounds really interesting. He also worked for HRC, and he is pretty much a commentator on what's going on in the GLBT community. Then, J.D.
At the top of the hour, we've got a movie opening in Houston, premiering in Houston on Thursday, called Theft, which is a benefit for Pride, and we've got an actor from the movie and one of the folks chairing the event to talk to. After that, there's another interview. Did you know there were bear artists? And I mean B-E-A-R, not V-A-R-E. There's a bear tour coming to Houston this next Sunday, and I'm talking with the organizer, about 9:15 or so. We'll talk about some of the artists, hear some of the music, and we'll go from there.
They have a cute website.
It is cute. Very cute logo. Bears on the Run is the name of the tour.
Look out, the bears are coming.
So all that's coming up, and of course we're going to be heading into fundraising starting next week for the next foreseeable future, and to help support this station, because we're a community's sponsor radio station rather than having corporate sponsorships.
Right, and so I think we have Michael McGurra on the line now to talk to you, Jack, about the upcoming Behavioral Health and Wellness Coalition Town Hall meeting.
Well, Deborah, thank you for doing all my work.
You're welcome.
Michael, are you with us?
Yes, I am. I'm here.
Michael, tell us about what's happening.
Well, the Gay, Lesbian, Bisexual, and Transgender Behavioral Health and Wellness Coalition is going to be having a town hall meeting on Thursday of this week at the Montrose Counseling Center, and it's going to be from 6:30 until 9 o'clock. And anyone who's interested in the behavioral health and wellness of the Houston area GLBT community is invited to come and to attend this meeting.
Okay, well, and what is the coalition? What is the Behavior Health and Wellness Coalition?
The Behavioral Health and Wellness Coalition originally started as a networking and continuing education credits for behavioral health professionals, licensed counselors, therapists, social workers. And at one point, the coalition decided that we should do something more proactive in addressing the issues that are specific to the GLBT community in Houston. And so the actually back in 2005 there was a futures conference, and folks talked about the needs of the GLBT community at that conference. And then in March of this year there was another meeting to talk more about the behavioral health general health of the GLBT community as it was addressed in that agenda. And so we decided that we would put together this town hall meeting to start looking at some ways that we can really become proactive in creating some grassroots kinds of activities within the GLBT community to increase the health and wellness of our community as a whole.
And how does that differ from the general community?
Well, you know, coming out issues, basically, or generally, just looking at the experiences of GLBT people as an oppressed group and how the experience of that oppression can adversely affect a person's health and wellness.
And how long has the coalition been around? You said it, you know, it sort of came out of the town hall meeting, well, two, I guess we call it, but, you know, the Montrose Counseling Center basically came out of town hall meeting one.
Yes, I'm aware of that. well, and actually, when the coalition decided to have this town hall meeting, we didn't know of a history of town hall meetings in the GLBT community in Houston. It's just after having started talking about creating this town hall meeting, then we started pulling people in, and folks started saying, well, you know, there were two others before this. So that was kind of news to the coalition. The coalition has been around, you know, I'm not sure. I want to say probably 4 or 5 years. I haven't been a part of it the entire time.
Okay.
I've been kind of the acting chair for the past about a year and a half.
And how often do you meet?
We meet on the second Thursday of each month from 3:30 to 5. And we meet over at the Montrose Counseling Center, which is located at 401 Bernard on the second floor. And what else do you need to know?
Well, and how has it changed since it's been opened up to this, you know, to, I guess, the non-professionals? And is there a real interest in the community to be part of this?
Actually, on my group list for the coalition, I have about 80 people who receive our regular emails about the coalition and our meetings and the activities that we participate in. So there's quite a bit of interest, and it seems to be growing. And it certainly has grown quite a bit since we opened it up to pretty much the entire community. Anyone who's interested in the behavioral health and wellness of our community.
Okay. And so on an ongoing basis, what does the coalition do?
Well, as I said, it was originally an opportunity for professionals to network and to obtain continuing education credits. It's only been during the past, oh, I suppose since March of this year, that we've really proactively been looking at taking on some activities that can really begin to address the concerns of the GLBT community with regards to health. And so we're looking at things like creating resources online for folks who are looking for ways to connect with the community. We're looking at working on different ways that different organizations can work together to create a more cohesive GLBT community in the Houston area. We're looking at how we can introduce ourselves to the mayor's wellness initiative and talk to the mayor's office about including the GLBT community in Houston as a part of that wellness initiative.
Right.
And we're also looking at ways in which to increase the city's awareness of the presence of the gay community in Houston in order to help, you know, kind of as we come out, we cause the city to be even safer for GLBT people.
And what you know, the population, does it, is there a variance in age? Is it more about the younger people who are coming out? You know, back in 10, 15 years ago, it was a wide range of people when they came out and their ages. Has it changed now a bit?
Well, generally speaking, gay and lesbian youth are coming out at younger ages, especially with the presence of Hatch as a resource for gay teens, for support and that kind of thing. But what the coalition is looking at is we're looking at the entire gay community and looking at issues for the entire spectrum. And one thing we also want to do is to find a way to build bridges between the GLBT youth and GLBT adults and GLBT elders.
Right. Right. And in the earlier days, none of the adults would want to even work with the children because there was that, you know, real concern.
Yeah, there was some concern that, you know, if we start providing services for youth, then we're thought to be recruiting youth, that kind of thing. And so, you know, we really don't see that. I don't think we see that much in Houston's GLBT community today. But it seems to me that like 15 years ago, that still was very much a concern.
And then we go to the other side of the spectrum where the, and I think it's today or tomorrow when the first baby boomer actually signs up for Social Security, which is like, wow.
Yeah.
Is that you, Deborah? No, not quite.
No, I'm a few years behind.
Yeah, me
I've
too.
Got a ways to go, but this woman who is turning 62 and therefore eligible for Social Security benefits, a retired teacher, actually went online and signed up. And I don't know, I guess because she was born January 1 of 1946.
Yes.
That made her the first official baby boomer, which is from 46 through 1964, and includes most of us here on the Queer Voices.
We're getting
collective.
There, yes. Yes, we'll be getting our checks here at KPFT. So the other end of the spectrum, as we were talking about, and I'm finding this out now that I now work at the Montrose Community the Counseling Center, as a full disclosure, I'm certainly learning a lot that the older population really is a lot less open about getting any type of care concerning mental health.
Well, now I can't really answer that question, but I do know that SPRY, which stands for Seniors Preparing for Rainbow Years, has been very successful in making contacts with elder GLBT folks. And they're also very active in the coalition and very much interested in participating in the town hall meeting. As a matter of fact, I think I probably have five or more folks who are associated with SPRY who will be at the town hall meeting.
Okay, so this meeting is open to everybody. It's free. There's even going to be a light dinner served. And
there will be light supper served for people who have RSVP'd.
That's the trick. Okay, and how does somebody RSVP?
They can email me at mwmagura@yahoo.com.
Spell out Magura.
It's mwmagura, MIGURA, at yahoo.com.
Great.
And Michael, you previously worked for the Montrose Counseling Center, and you now have a new position. You want to tell us a little bit about that, what current work you're doing?
Sure. I was an educator with the Montrose Counseling Center for 11 and a half years, and recently I started working for a company called Integrated Behavioral Health Services, and we are going to be providing assistance in providing behavioral health services to foster care kids.
Oh, that's a wonderful thing to be doing, especially with your background, knowing that some of those foster kids are GLBT. And there's also a need to have gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people who can be foster parents.
Yeah, the company really has emphasis on diversity, and actually when we went through the interviewing process, they were very much interested in my experience with the GLBT community and assisting them in addressing the concerns of GLBT youth. So I'll be excited to be able to share my expertise in addressing those concerns.
What do you hope to accomplish from this meeting?
Well, we hope to actually, you know, stir up some action and really get some grassroots activities happening, and getting people to work together and create collaborations with folks who have different access to different resources, communicating what's available to one another, and start to create some actions with regards to really getting things moving with regards to addressing the wellness of the community.
Okay. Well, Michael, this meeting is Thursday, this Thursday, the 18th, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. It's at the Montrose Counseling Center, which is at 401 Bernard, second floor. And if you RSVP, there will be a light dinner provided. So, Michael, once again, tell us how you RSVP.
They can RSVP by emailing me at mwmigura@yahoo.com.
Okay.
That's mwmigura@yahoo.com, and that's a special account that I created for the coalition business.
Okay. Michael, thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 13th, 2007. Thousands of LGBT people and their supporters in Singapore are calling for the government to decriminalize gay sex. The parliament plans to consider the first overhaul of criminal law later this month in the conservative city-state in almost a quarter century. Under proposed changes, oral and anal sex between consenting heterosexual adults would no longer be considered an offense. But the same acts between men, covered by Penal Code Section 377A, will remain illegal. Conviction could lead to a maximum penalty of 2 years in jail. An internet petition to Singapore Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong, protesting the continued outlawing of consensual adult gay sex, was launched by several LGBT groups in early October and had gathered nearly 2,500 signatures within its first several days online. While most chose to stay anonymous, many people who signed on responded to the petition's request to include their names and those of their employers. They included multinational company executives, engineers, and teachers. Petition organizer Alan Saya said in a statement that by maintaining Section 377A, we are in fact moving backwards, which defeats the government's goal of updating our criminal laws to keep in step with Singapore's image as a modern and forward-thinking country.
According to the Associated Press, Singapore's Prime Minister told a local university forum last month that what people do in private is their own business, but in public, certain norms apply, and that changing the law would be a very divisive argument. We will not reach consensus, however much we discuss it. The government has insisted that it would not actively prosecute private, consensual adult homosexual acts, but the online petition argues it is the responsibility of any democratically elected government to protect minorities from the tyranny of the majority. Far more conservative countries have done away with laws like these and are none the worse for it. Another Singapore activist, Alex Au, told reporters that while he was pleased by the response, online petitions don't have a very stellar history of effectiveness. Singapore celebrities supporting the campaign to dump the anti-gay law also appear in a rap video posted on the YouTube website. "Repeal it," the video proclaims, ending with the words, "It's not just a gay thing, it's about equality." Using the internet to communicate their concerns seems to be the only option available to Singapore's LGBT communities and their supporters. The government shut down several Pride Week events earlier this year, including a human rights forum, photo exhibit, and fun run and picnic in a downtown park, claiming that each disturbed public order.
But inclement weather couldn't rain on the 18th annual Pride Parade in Johannesburg, South Africa on October 6th, although participants did brave cold temperatures and light rain, marching and riding on more than 30 floats and vehicles into Zoo Park for a somewhat muddy post-parade rally and concert. Some marched with paper bags over their heads to avoid being identified, while many others dressed in typically festive Pride parade attire. Organizers estimated the crowd at about 5,000, which they said included many families. A press release said that, as if on cue, the rain mostly let up during the 90-minute march. A minute of silence was held at the post-parade rally to remember the victims of anti-queer violence. Pride organizer Tracy Sandilands challenged, "Everyone here to speak out against prejudice wherever they find it. It's time to take our stand against the pockets of homo prejudice that still exist in our society."
And about 150 people, mostly lesbians, marched past the local Meadowlands Township Police Station in late September to protest escalating queer bashing attacks in Johannesburg's large black Soweto district. Marchers wore shirts with slogans like "Dying for Justice" and "Pissed Off Woman." The protesters demanded better protection from homophobic assaults. In July, lesbian Sizakela Sigasa and Salome Masua were tortured and raped, shot to death, and dumped in a Meadowlands field. Police have yet to make any arrests. March organizer Fuma Masuku told reporters that, "This is my home and I also have the right to be here. We fear being raped and even murdered, but I'm tired of running."
Thousands of LGBT people and their supporters marched through Taiwan's capital of Taipei on October 13th, demanding respect and equality. Pride marchers filled downtown streets carrying traditional rainbow flags, balloons, and banners. Some dressed in flamboyant period costumes, while others wore only skimpy bathing suits despite the cool, windy weather. A rally and concert outside Taipei City Hall capped off the festivities. One of the organizers, Wang Ping, Secretary General of Gender Sexuality Rights Association Taiwan, complained about stalled legislation drafted by the government in 2003 to establish anti-bias protections in open marriage and adoption to same-gender couples. Critics claim that the measures were drafted at the time only to gain the electoral support of the LGBT community.
U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's office issued a statement late this week saying that the Committee on Education and Labor would proceed with the consideration of a sexual orientation-only version of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act in the coming week, with a floor vote on the measure expected the week after that. The statement followed a meeting between members of Pelosi's senior staff and representatives of a 284-member coalition of LGBT groups that had won a brief delay in the process after expressing strong opposition to any form of ENDA that doesn't include a prohibition on gender identity discrimination. While activists have been fighting for federal workplace anti-bias protections covering sexual orientation for more than 30 years, the coalition believes that dropping the more recently added gender identity from the bill both leaves transgender people unprotected and seriously diminishes protections for gay, lesbian, and bisexual people. In an interview this week with the Washington Blade LGBT newspaper, Pelosi echoed the assertion by lead House sponsor Barney Frank of Massachusetts that an all-or-nothing strategy is unworkable and that we might as well just go home because it doesn't always happen all at once. Brad Luna, a spokesman for the Human Rights Campaign, which has been roundly criticized for not joining the unified coalition of LGBT groups opposed to an ENDA without transgender protections, told the LGBT Bay Area Reporter newspaper that his group got an agreement from the speaker to bring a separate bill offering gender identity protections up for a vote at a later date when there's enough support for it. But many analysts believe that President George W. Bush will veto any form of ENDA that reaches his desk.
Legislation pending in Guatemala's Congress would define family solely as a father, a mother, and their child or children. The Integral Protection for Marriage and Family Act would bar single parents and same-gender couples from the definition of family and punish any official in the Central American nation who publicly contradicts that definition. In a press release this week, Human Rights Watch said that the measure would declare that nearly 40% of Guatemalan families are not families at all. HRW LGBT rights researcher Juliana Cano Nieto charged that targeting children and their caregivers in the name of a political agenda is not only unjustifiable, it is morally reprehensible.
California's Republican Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, as expected, this week vetoed the second marriage equality bill in 2 years to be passed by the Democrat-controlled state legislature. His veto message was the same as in 2005. Only a public referendum or state Supreme Court decision can open legal marriage to same-gender couples. California's top court is expected to rule on that issue next year.
But finally, the popular syndicated advice columnist known as Dear Abby told the Associated Press this week that she fully supports marriage equality for same-gender couples. I believe if two people want to commit to each other, God bless them. That is the highest form of commitment, for heaven's sake, said Jean Phillips. She took over the long-running Dear Abby column from her mother, Pauline, 5 years ago, when the woman known as Abigail Van Buren was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. The younger Phillips, who prefers to be called Abby, as her mother was, received the first Straight for Equality Award this week from Parents, Families, and Friends of Lesbians and Gays, a U.S. group that, like similar organizations around the world, advocates for and offers support to LGBT people and their families. She continues in the footsteps of the original Abby, who helped publicize the existence of PFLAG in 1984, when she referred a distraught parent in her column to the fledgling organization. I'm trying to tell kids if they are gay, it's okay to be gay, said the current Abby. I've tried to tell families if they have a gay family member to accept them and love them as they always have. Phillips said she isn't worried that speaking out on the marriage issue will cause editors to censor or cancel her column, which appears in about 1,400 newspapers around the world, adding that, if gay Americans are not allowed to get married and have all the benefits that American citizens are entitled to by the Bill of Rights, they should get one hell of a tax break. That is my opinion, she said. I'm for treating each other with respect, trying to do the best you can.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 13th, 2007. Written by Greg Gordon and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Tanya Kane Perry.
And I'm Christopher Gall.
Ask us to dance. We are crossing our fingers. We are flowers, wanting flowers in a garden at the edge of the room. We are fragile and clumsy. We never had.
commercial. It's a lifetime, prime time special. And keeping time by the TV guide.
This is J.D. Doyle, and I really like that artist. Her name is Julie Lloyd, and that's L-O-Y-D. Her the CD that came from is called The Waiting Room. That was the name of that track. And one reason I played that tonight is she'll be in Houston on the 25th. That's a Thursday night at Mojo Rising, one of our favorite venues for artists. That's a 1600 Shepherd. I haven't got the time of that event, but they have a neat website, mojorising.com. Again, that was Julie Lloyd. And on to Deborah.
This is Queer Voices.
Yes, this is Queer Voices, and we are adding the very queer voices of two lovely women tonight. One is Madeline Sklar, who is the founder of Go Girls Music, also known as GoGirls.com. And,
well, GoGirlsMusic.com.
And 'cause chicks rock.
That's right.
Yeah. And I keep meaning to get that tattoo. She's going to tell us about what her organization does and more about, you know, how people can come out and take part in some of the upcoming concerts, particularly one that's coming up on November 3rd that will benefit Friends for Life, which is a no-kill shelter. And the director, Shuttlesworth, and she's the director of the shelter, and she's going to tell us more about the work they do there. So, Madeline, welcome to Queer Voices.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Deborah and JD. I really appreciate it, but I have to correct you. It's gogirlsmusic.com.
Okay.
Because gogirls.com is a totally different website.
And maybe not one we would really encourage.
I think if you think about what could be there, that's
one of the dangers of the internet.
We send a lot of people there by accident.
Uh-oh. Okay, well, I'm glad I stand corrected.
And hey, if you'd like to get a Go Girls tattoo, you know, they're available anytime.
Okay.
I've got
and
four
we'll,
of them.
We'll explain the Go Girls tattoo. It's this little emblem of a musician with a guitar.
Well, there's
one that's like more like she's dancing, and then one she's got a guitar.
One's with a guitar, and then there's another one where you can see there's also a guitar.
Oh, my
I'm
gosh.
I'm showing off the tattoo.
She's got several of them, but the trend there for a while was for people to get them like near their ankle.
That started off where I decided last year to celebrate 10 years of Go Girls Music, or 11 years now, but when we turned 10, I thought, hey, I should go get a Go Girls tattoo to symbolize this great community I started so long ago. Hard to believe it's, you know, we're still going so well and so strong, and I got it on my ankle, and the same night, three other of my friends decided to do the same thing, so we all have it the same tattoo in the same spot.
Okay. So they can go to the website, which is
GoGirlsMusic.com.
GoGirlsMusic.com.
We are. Yeah, let me talk a little bit about who we are, what we do.
How did this group get started, and what's the purpose of it?
All tattoos aside, what's the organization?
Well, you know, I could talk about the tattoos all night. GoGirlsMusic.com is the oldest and largest online community of independent women in music. And I started it, it's going to be 12 years in January, and I started it just out of frustration. frustration of getting ignored at the guitar shops and looking for other female musicians to communicate with, and the internet was new at the time, and I thought, wow, this could be a great way to meet other people and network and have a community, and that's how it all started.
So you're a musician.
I grew up playing. I wouldn't call myself a musician now, but I did grow up, you know, wanting to be the next Joan Jett and all of that.
Didn't we all?
Yeah, I think we all, you know, back in the early 80s, you know, we all wanted to do that. And realized that wasn't really for me, but figured I would somehow be involved in the music business. And I have to say, I love what I do. I love my job. It doesn't even feel like a job.
So how are you involved other than as Go Girls? You're a producer, right?
Well, I'm more of a promoter, because we put on events all over the country, and so I'm there promoting and putting them on, producing them, the actual events. And in addition to that, I also do coaching and consulting with musicians, and I do it mostly by phone and email. And I don't have any clients here in Houston. They're all outside of here. I even have some overseas.
So you're Houston-based, but mm-hmm. you do these things all over.
Yes.
And are they always benefits?
No, not always, but a lot of what we do are benefits. And the Go Girls Music Fest, which is what we're doing next month on November 3rd, is a series I developed. This is our eighth year to do this. And basically what we wanted to do in 2000 was start a benefit series where we put on these shows all around the country and raise money for different charities. And it's grown into this huge thing. And this year we're putting on 12 shows around the country. And, of course, one here in Houston. It would be really bad if I did not put on one myself in my own hometown. So we're very, very excited about having that at Last Concert Cafe, which is a great, great venue owned by a woman, very supportive of what we're doing. And this year we decided to make the theme animal friendly. So in every city that we're putting on a show, there's a local animal shelter or organization that's involved. And for Houston, that was a real no-brainer for me. I chose Friends for Life because we've done work with them in the past. It's a great organization. Celise has done such amazing work, so, you know, I had to give her a call and say, hey, let's do this.
Well, before we go on and have Celise talk a little bit more about Friends for Life, let's just make it clear that all of the musicians are not lesbian, although some of them
are.
That was my question.
I'm sorry. Stole your question. And just run over a few of the people that have been involved in the shows and some of the kind of noteworthy ones.
That'll be performing at the show. I mean, what's great about the Go Girls Music Fest is that at our show here in Houston, we're going to have 10 different performers and bands playing that night, which I'm so excited about. I mean, we've got Glenna Bell, who's pretty well known here in Houston, Robin Lee, who I know for Pride, she won something.
I don't know.
I didn't do my homework, so I couldn't tell you exactly what, but I know that she is well known in the lesbian community here in Houston. We've got some really good rock bands, Three Kisses and Osiris and the Snake Charmers. I'm really excited about the lineup, and if people want to go online and check out and get more information, they can go to gogirlsmusicfest.com, or they can go to our MySpace page and become our MySpace friend and get more information there, which is MySpace.
I already am.
I know, you are, JD. I think we've been MySpace friends for a long time. So you can go to myspace.com/gogirlsmusicfesthouston. And that is where you can find our event. And also, what's really cool about this event is all ages. And the cover is only $5. It's very low. We wanted to keep it low. We want people to come out and support this great event.
That's 50 cents a performer.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, an act.
Exactly. But even better than that, the first 100 people in the door get a free Go Girls Music Fest CD. So if you're one of the first 100 people in the door, you get a free CD.
How many CDs have you all put out?
We've put out, this will be our seventh year.
Sounds CDs.
Doing a CD every year. Basically, it's a compilation CD, kind of like the best of our roster of female artists all throughout the world. And we've got 16 tracks on there, and one of the tracks is from one of our locals, Osiris, who will be playing at the show.
And while the acts are all either a female artist or
Fronted.
That was the word I was looking for. It's so useful to have J.D. around.
It really is.
I had the word in my head, but it just couldn't get out of my mouth.
That's unusual itself.
Thanks, J.D. I feel beloved. So they're fronted by a female artist. This is, like you said, open to everyone. So it is an environment. Men are totally welcome and appreciated. A lot of really fine musicians are in the bands.
Absolutely.
That happen to be men.
Absolutely. So. We don't discriminate at all. As a matter of fact, you know, a lot of people think with Go Girls, we're just about the women. We're not. The only requirement is one female in a group. So actually, we encourage anybody that fits into that to be a part of what we're doing. And we welcome everybody at our events, always.
And so we'll go to Solis and we'll talk about, first of all, Friends for Life. Now, tell me what Friends for Life is.
Well, thank you very much for having me, and Madeline, thank you for the kind words that you said. Madeline and I have known each other for years, and she just rocks. No one can network like Madeline Sklar. And Friends for Life, I founded 6 years ago as a no-kill animal rescue organization, and we are now doing adoptions at a PetSmart adoption center on South Shepherd. We have done at that adoption center almost our 600th adoption there.
Wow.
And of the animals that we find good homes for, we take in animals that otherwise had been rejected by other shelters. So 75% of the animals that we place in homes had been rejected as unadoptable by other groups. So our particular niche is to redefine adoptable, to take animals that otherwise wouldn't be placed.
Yeah, sometimes at certain places they won't take an animal because of their age or because of their health history, different reasons. So your policy is to take all animals?
We take
any animal?
In any condition, any age, any breed. Our only constraint is space.
And these are dogs?
Dogs and cats.
Okay.
Actually, I just came back from College Station today bringing a ferret back who just had surgery. So ferrets, rabbits, guinea pigs.
Yeah. I first met Solis at the Houston Women's Music Festival, about 10 years ago, and she had a baby pig. And if you want to know what a babe magnet is, it's a baby pig. She must have had every woman there come over and talk to her and ask to hold the baby pig.
That would probably work at the ripcord, too, though.
And you know, you're saying that like it was calculated or something. You remember the pig.
No, I remember you, too. Believe me, I remember you, too. But, you know, why did you think I wanted to come over and hold the baby pig?
Because the pig's the cutest living thing.
Yeah. I have to say, my dog is next to the cutest in the world of the baby pig. And y'all all know how I feel about Betty Boop. The cutest puppy in the world. She's a Boston Terrier. I even talked to you that day about Boston Terrier, so I remember it vividly.
I remember.
What is the concept behind the no kill?
Well, the idea is this is a movement that started as an idea in the head of a man named Edward Duven several years ago. This is 1989. And he looked around at where animal sheltering had gone and realized that we had gotten to a place where animal shelters were killing many more animals than they placed. And so his concept was to begin to put the emphasis on treatment and rehabilitation and finding homes and move away from warehousing and mass euthanasia to finding placement.
So where's the shelter? Where's it located?
Right now we do adoptions out of the PetSmart at 2902 South Shepherd. We have that adoption center. And in the works is building a local standalone adoption center here in town. And this is one of the ways that we are moving toward that goal with wonderful fundraisers like Madeline is helping us put on here.
And how can people contact you?
Well, we have a website, and actually it doesn't lead to any place nearly as interesting as Madeline's mistake website does. nokill1.org. That's N-O-K-I-L-L, number 1.org, and that's our website. You can get information about our organization, the Animals for Adoption, and actually some of the kind of creative things that we're going to be doing at this festival, this music fest.
And is there a phone number?
It's 713-861-9500.
All right. And just, we've got about a minute left. I want to thank you both for being here, Madeline Squire with GoGirlsMusic.com. And Celeste Shuttlesworth.
But you're supposed to say, because chicks rock.
Because chicks do rock. And then Celeste Shuttlesworth, director of the Shelter of Friends for Life. So what's in store on November 3rd?
November 3rd.
Last Concert Cafe.
We're going to have auction and raffles going on as well, so people should bring their checkbook, their credit cards, because we have lots of cool stuff.
We have a special surprise, a special art surprise.
And what is that?
The special art surprise is, years ago, someone gave me a book called Why Cats Paint, and we just thought, why not? So this is our grand experiment, and we have some wonderful little furry Jackson Pollocks in our ranks, and I got to tell you, we are going to have some fantastic cat paintings.
I think you also can have cat and dog dancing, so you know, we might start a whole new thing there.
What was the date of this event again?
It's on November 3rd, and how do people get tickets? But through the website or just show up? Or
just show up at the door. It's just $5 cover. Last Concert Cafe on Nance Street. And we plan to start early. It's going to start around 5 o'clock and go till about 1 a.m. So you can, you know, come early, come later, bring the kids. It's
and what
be
day of the week is this?
Saturday.
It's a Saturday.
Saturday,
so,
November 3rd.
So. All right. So, because chicks do rock. That's gogirlsmusic.com. And thank you for being with us on Queer Voices.
The night is mine. Speakers breaking, body shaking. Ooh, it's making me crazy. You're making me crazy. Let's wait till the room fills up. The crowd is moving. They're gonna turn it up. Turn it up. I like to listen to my music loud. I like it when the DJ plays my style. So if you like it, come and dance with. I like to listen to my music loud. I like it when the DJ plays my style. I like to listen to my music loud. So if you like it, come and dance with me. They're all watching me. Nobody's stopping me.
This is JD, and you've heard me play Josh Duffy and Jason DeMarco before in this show. They were both produced by Alan Lett. Alan Lett's a local producer, excellent producer, and also, as you can tell, an excellent singer. He's got a brand new CD called A Moment Away. That was track number one, called Loud.
This is Queer Voices.
And this is Jack Valensky, and on the line with me from Brooklyn, New York, is Wayne Beeson, is it? Okay, author of Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. Wayne will be in Houston this Thursday at the Community Center, which is at 3600 Montrose, Suite 201. And why are you coming to Texas this week?
Well, I'm coming to hold a protest against this quack group that tries to give therapy to people so they can go from gay to straight. The group is called the National Association for Research and Therapy for Homosexuality, otherwise known as NARTH. And they have some very weird theories about gay people and think that if you just give them enough money, they can make you straight. Unfortunately, they don't deliver on their promise and they keep your money.
Wayne, how did you get involved in this?
I was working at the Human Rights Campaign, 1998, and the right wing launched a $1 million ad campaign saying that people could pray away the gay. And they put newspaper ads everywhere from the New York Times to the USA Today. These are big full-page ads. And I started going undercover to their press conference.
Really?
The next moves were going to be at the National Press Club in Washington. And I slowly got more involved with this because there just wasn't that much literature out there to counter this big public relations campaign. And I just took it from there, and it was fascinating. And the real reward, of course, was that by telling the stories of people who had been through these ministries and survived, I was able to keep other people from going in and save a few lives in the process. And it's been really something that's I'm very proud of, very rewarding, and keeps me going to counter these so-called ex-gay organizations.
Well, and mostly, you know, they say these people are cured, but in reality, isn't the fact that most of them are not cured of what they considered cured?
Oh, none of them are cured. They're just, in a sense, recloseted homosexuals who learn to change their behavior to fit their religious beliefs, but the totality of evidence is overwhelming. If you look, first of all, the science, there is no scientific validity to their studies that say they've changed. They offer no statistics to show this. And the main people that have been writing the books about how you can change have either come out of the closet or been caught in scandals. There's really no there. All this ex-gay propaganda proves is that if you spend millions of dollars to try to trick people and fool them into thinking you can change, you're going to actually get some people who think that. And this really is about is poll numbers. Poll after poll shows that when people believe you can go from gay to straight, they vote anti-gay. And when people believe it's who you are, part of your heart and your soul and how you were born, they vote pro-gay. The religious right has seen these polls and freaked out, and they realize that if they don't spend a great deal of money to try to trick Americans into believing it's a casual choice, like what kind of cereal you're going to eat, that can be altered, they're going to lose this culture war they launched. We didn't want war. They launched it, and they're losing. And this really ex-gay attempt is an attempt to soften their message. This fire and brimstone is not playing well with the broader community. It plays well with their base, but they're losing the moderates and independents. And in fact, a new poll just came out that showed that a lot of younger people find these fundamentalists to be very intolerant and
yes,
like gay issues. So looking at these polls, they say, well, we have to do something, and the ex-gay myth is their answer. However, I don't think they're doing so well with it.
Have you ever actually been inside one of these group meet, you know, one of these conventions where they actually try to do their stuff?
Yeah, I've been inside the ministries, the smaller ones, and also to the conferences. Gone undercover and gone also as myself after I was unable to go, you know, under the radar. And what I found it to be very depressing. There were a bunch of people who were blaming all their problems on their homosexuality instead of dealing with life. They were on drugs. Oh, it's because I'm gay. This is what gay people do. Or drinking. Or all kinds of addictions: sex addiction, drug addiction. I call them the formers because they're all former, you name it, drug addicts, prostitutes, and they all sit around in circles when I go and just bitch and complain. It was kind of like misery loves company, is what I saw there. And nobody at any of these things said they had changed. The only people that said this were the people getting paid to say they've changed who were leading these ministries. There was nobody I found with a real job, with a real life, who had made the transition. Anybody I had seen that was not on the payroll of these groups doing PR said they were on a journey, they were making progress, but there was nobody who said, hey, I've reached the finish line, unless they were a public relations person. And I think that says quite a bit.
Well, you also made international news when you caught one of these people at cruising one of the bars in Washington.
Yeah, it still seems really surreal in a way. I mean,
were you sort of tipped off about this, or did you just happen to catch him?
Well, I had gotten two more tips throughout the year that seemed to be very credible. And one was that this gentleman, Mr. John Polk, who was the leader of Exodus International and also the leader of Focus on the Family's Love One Out conference, I had gotten two tips that he was seen at gay bars. And I've since received a third that said he cruised somebody at a Denny's who was also an ex-gay. So, there's a few incidents here. However, nobody caught and there was no proof. So I sat down to write my book, Anything But Straight. And I was trying to figure out what chapter one was going to be. And then, it was amazing. The phone rang, and my colleague, Daryl Hershef, said, chapter one's at the bar, and he's hitting on me. And I was like, what do you mean? He said, John Polk is here. And it was really a bizarre moment.
You can't make these things up.
He's
the
number one most famous ex-gay in the entire world. It was on the cover of Newsweek, Oprah, 60 Minutes, Good Morning America. Everyone had heard a story, and there he is, hitting on the guy that I share an office with at the Human Rights Campaign, which I've since left to start Truth Wins Out, www.truthwinsout.org. It's an organization to counter the ex-gays. But back then, I still can't believe that this had happened. It still boggles my mind. And it was a severe blow to these groups. In fact, they've changed their entire rhetoric because of this and a couple more scandals. They're a little more careful about cavalierly claiming that they can cure you. There's a lot more qualifiers now that you're really just on a journey, or you're not going to, could always fall back into men, that type of thing. You're not getting the flat-out Jesus miracle cure as much as you used to because of these scandals. They're covering their behinds is what they're doing, so when they fall, they could say they slipped rather than admit that they're just suppressing who they are and haven't changed one bit.
It's pretty incredible. Tell us about your Houston connection. You also lived here for a while?
I did live there. I lived in A-Leaf, Texas. I went to Hastings High School for a year in Holland Middle School back in, it was the early 80s. And so I definitely have a connection and kinship with Houston. And in fact, coming to the event in Houston is my best friend from middle school who I played on the football team with. He's a straight guy. He's married, his kids, and it's kind of a homecoming in a way for me to come back. And I always love going down there. I always feel at home.
How's your book doing?
It's done quite well. Very proud of it. Got nominated for two Lambda Literary Awards. And now I've written a second book that's come out called Bashing Back, Wayne Dustin on GLBT People, Politics, and Culture. This touches on every imaginable topic under the sun. It's really fun to read because they're in 800-word columns. And You know, so it's good bedtime reading. You put one or two, three columns before you go to bed. But however, you might not be able to put it down. You might lose a night of sleep. But that's just the bias of the author talking.
Yes, yes. Sounds really interesting. And so is this basically about, you know, that you... and I guess my question is that the younger generation may not even see some of the reasons why we need to continue to fight and continue to be aware of what's going on.
Well, I think equality is our destination, but it's certainly not predestination. There's a huge force against us that's very well organized and fighting every day, and not too long ago was all powerful. The conservatives, and particularly the Republican Party. And we've seen the vast amounts of hypocrisy combined with Iraq and the incompetence of the president erode some of their power. But we can never sit back until we've achieved full equality. And you know what? Even then, we have to remain vigilant. If you look at other minorities, you know, anti-Semitism still exists.
Mm-hmm.
Racism still exists. Racism still exists. Just because they're ahead of us legally and have passed some laws doesn't mean that things have become perfect. We're not in this kind of utopia. And I think any young person who thinks that we can kick back needs to get a reality check. Number one, our government bars us from serving in the military right now, which is an ultimate slap in the face where they, you know, in a sense, challenge their patriotism. And that's really what they want to do. We can't serve in most churches in a capacity of leadership. That's taking our spirituality away. We can't marry. It goes basic and fundamental rights, the right to marry. We don't have that right now except in Massachusetts. So they've taken our ability to have to form legal families away, which threaten everything from hospital visitation to adoption to marrying a partner who lives overseas. They've challenged our patriotism. They challenged our right to serve in churches. It's for anybody who thinks that we've won this, we dearly are flat out humiliated by our government. We are kicked in the groin on a daily basis. And anybody who thinks otherwise, you know, I guess they just like being, you know, a second class citizen. I think they must feel okay with that. I think that's a very precarious and dangerous situation to be in. I think we shouldn't have two sets of laws for different people. The straight majority, then you've got the gay laws. And until we have parity under the law, we need to wake up and fight like mad.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. You're listening to KPFT Houston, and Wayne, you'll be in town this Thursday at the Community Center, which is 3600 Montrose, Suite 201, and your book is Anything But Straight, Unmasking the Scandals and Lies Behind the Ex-Gay Myth. And what's the title of your new book?
It's called Bashing Back, Wayne Besson on GLBT People, Politics, and Culture. It's a lot of fun. It's gotten incredible reviews so far. It's really gotten, you know, if it got any more stars, it would look like a planetarium.
And what's your website?
It's www.truthwinsout.org, and there's also www.WayneBesson.com.
Wayne,
spelled B-E-S-E-N.
Wayne, thank you very much for joining us, and we'll have to talk about your new book next time we get you on.
Thanks so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You're listening to Queer Voices.
KPFT brings back the fall concert series at the Miller Outdoor Theater starting this Sunday, October 14th, and will continue every Sunday afternoon through November 18th. From 4 to 7, admission is free.
Come out and meet your favorite KPFT radio personalities and experience the diverse sounds from your community radio station.
Again, the fall concert series begins this Sunday, October 14th through November 18th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the Miller Outdoor Theater, and admission is free. For more information, visit kpft.org.
This program is sponsored by the City of Houston through the Miller Outdoor Theater Advisory Board. 90.1 KPFT Houston, your community radio station.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT Houston. Now, more of Queer Voices with Jack Belinsky and the entire Queer Voices crew.
So happy here on Queer Voices. Tell us, JD, who's the artist that does that?
That's Tom Robinson.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah. And what happens if you have a leather bar that they do drag and a drag queen gets her wig stolen? Well, we have a way of finding that out because we have with us David LaDuca, who is starring in. Are you the star? Are you the primary?
I wouldn't call it that. It's but it's a great featured part.
Okay. He's one of the actors performing in Theft, which will be premiering at the River Oaks Theater on October 18th. And that's, of course, over at 2009 West Gray in Houston. It's at 6:30 p.m. And it's a fundraiser for Pride Houston. And Eric, I forgot how to say your last name.
It's Skanes.
Skanes, who is the event
chair.
Yeah. And they're going to talk to us a little bit about this Texas-made movie. So, where do we start? Where is this bar?
David, tell us about the movie.
Okay. The location of the movie is a town called Liberty Hills, Texas. And we filmed it in Lockhart, Texas, which is the same place where they filmed Gilbert Grape that Johnny Depp did. And Waiting for Guffman, which is a really, really funny funny movie.
One of my favorites.
Yes. We have some of the same buildings are in our little movie here. So.
And where exactly is Lockhart?
Lockhart.
Texas, near Austin?
It's about, I think, I want to say about 50 miles southwest of Austin.
Mm.
So it's a small town with great barbecue. Yeah.
And this Austin filmmaker and writer Paul Bright is the director, and it's a fast-paced satire. And there is a evangelical preacher involved.
It's a really bizarre and interesting plot line. The title of the movie Theft. The dot 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 was kind of suggested by the distributor because they felt like the real title, Theft of the Drag Queen's Wig, might not appeal to a broad mass. Of course, probably most of the viewers here would think that's, a
just
great title. Exactly, right? I mean, okay, you know what the movie's about, and that's exactly what it's about. It's about other things, too. It's about relationships and love. There's two young men characters that have a relationship and kind of, conquer the odds type of thing, but it doesn't end as sweetly as you might think. So, but that's not bad. It's just meant to be intriguing.
What's the main conflict of the movie?
Well, the main conflict is the ability to let people live the life they want to live, fighting for that freedom to do so. There is an evangelical preacher, and she and her followers believe that this leather bar, this gay bar that has these drag events to keep the community together, that's the method of selling the message and keeping the community strong that they have found in this small town. So it's a kind of bizarre thing to have a gay bar in a small town like that to begin with, a leather bar on top of that. So you could picture Mary's or the Ripcord meets
PJ's or
yeah, you know, take your pick up anywhere where there's guys in dresses. And it's not really what it is the one character. That's my character. It's George. He is the manager of the bar, and he puts on the drag shows. So that's my character. He's gay, but he's not.
He's not really a queen.
Who's not a queen? But he's the kind of guy that is more interested in the community and not in his drag career. That's not why he does it. He does it because he knows it's a good vehicle to keep the guys.
It's good for business.
Together and good for business. A great way to put it.
But you're not just one drag character. You have several.
Yes, because the woman evangelical minister is costumed a certain way, and all of my drag costumes and names sort of satirize her identity. So it's quite a I want to say it's not pious, because it's not. It's really kind of pokes fun at a lot of the belief systems of people who would take the extremes that she would take to stop this kind of activity from happening and stop a loving community from perpetuating.
Now, so are each of these characters pretty much the same, or do they have a distinction between them?
There are what happens because of the, if you can,
one wears a black wig, one wears a blonde.
I mean, honestly, I could talk about the drag characters, but that's not really that won't really be the thing that is the hook to this movie. What it really is about, I think, is there are two young boys in this that their identities, the way that the movie is set up, it unravels all these kind of plot lines and existing relationships, and because it's a small town.
And so it's in part a love story.
It's very much a love story, yes. It's a love story. It's also about love after death, loving people after death. There's a lot of bigger themes in it. The title is a little bit deceiving because
I might guess it's a comedy with a political statement.
There you go. Well said. That's it.
Hey, JD, you know this. So, Eric, tell us a little bit about how it came about to have the premiere in Houston and Pride Houston's part in this.
Well, they originally wanted to put it in Austin. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, Austin didn't have the organizations big enough, such as Pride, to put it on. And they really came down here and said, you know, we really want to make this big. We think you guys can do it. And we said, I think we can too. So it's we worked in with River Oaks Theater, who's been phenomenal with us. And that's kind of the history of how it came to be.
Mm-hmm. And so it's a fundraiser for Pride Houston. Give us the, you know, who, what, where kind of things.
It's going to be at the River Oaks Theater. It's going to start around 6:30 that evening. We're going to have kind of cocktails up in there.
That was October 18th.
It's October 18th, Thursday, this coming Thursday. We're going to start with cocktails, just kind of meet the cast for everybody who's attending the theater. We're also going to have a auction. We're going to feature a drag costume that's actually featured in the film that people are going to be able to bid on.
Miss Mary Devine.
Yeah, and which,
is
which
her
obviously
costume.
His
name.
It's my size.
It was definitely one size fits all for me. They kind of pinned me into it to shoot it. So, but it's fun. And there's great shoes, as I recall. Great shoes.
Oh well, those were ever so important.
Shoes are. And here's the thing. You know, timing couldn't be better. If there's anybody looking for a new outfit for Halloween, I mean, just it's one stop shopping. So.
Uh huh. And the wig. I am a little curious about the wig.
Well, the wigs in the film do a variety of mechanical things.
Oh my gosh.
And if I tell you more, I'm going to give it away. But if you can imagine any type of innuendo.
It's just the fact that the wig is missing a major plot line, or is it? Is there a mystery as far as who stole the wig?
Definitely a mystery as to who stole it. The audience knows before the character does. So it's kind of like the audience looking in on this world. It's not meant to be you know, a...
Well, I think we're stealing some of Eric's time talking.
Okay. Oh, you know, hey, sure. He's the... David is the actor of all this, so, you know, I'm just along for the ride.
Well, I'll tell you that Theft, it was a good fit for Pride in the sense that I think a lot of the people that are supporters of Pride will get this message, and it's a really great vehicle for that message.
And so, how do
people... the money raised? Does it go to Pride, or what's
the right,
money
used for? You know, we Pride had the opportunity to make sure that 100% of the proceeds came to Pride. But, you know, Pride is elected to work alongside with ICOH, which is the Imperial Court of Houston. They're emceeing the evening for us. Going to start off with Paul Bright's speech in the beginning. And then they just really worked alongside with us throughout the entire time.
So he will be there.
Yeah, Paul Bright will be there. Yeah.
And much of the cast.
And then there's a after party.
Tell us about the after event.
It's over at Meteor. It was going to be at South Beach, but South Beach is closed on the weekdays and only open Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays now.
Really?
So we moved it over to Meteor. It's right down the road over there at Fairview and Boston, I believe is the intersection.
And so the cast, and there'll be a drag show there during...
No, there's no drag show. Hedda Lane, who is also featured in the film,
is an RG. Real girl.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, she is going to be there. There's not going to be a performance, unfortunately, but everyone from the cast is going to be there, and I believe there might be a preview of Dreamgirls may
I think
stop by.
Well, yeah,
we don't want to plug that.
Hedda Lane is in the movie, right?
Yes.
And she's kind of an Austin diva.
Yeah,
yes.
And David LaDuca, by the way, is in the cast of Dreamgirls currently playing. And how do people get tickets?
They can go
for
to pridehouston.org. There's right there on the front page. Just go ahead and click on that. Or you can just go up to the movie theater the day of. And it's at October 18th, this coming Thursday, starting between 6:30 and 7 is when the cocktail hour starts.
Well, thank you for being with us on Queer Voices.
Who doesn't know what I'm talking about? Who's never left home? Who's never struck out to find a dream and a light of their own? Many precede and many will follow. A young girl's dream no longer hollow. It takes the shape of a place out west. But what it holds her, she hasn't yet guessed. She needs wide open spaces, room to make her big mistakes. She needs this road as a child. Wide-eyed and grinning, she never tired. But now she won't be coming back with the rest. If these are life lessons, she'll take this path. And she needs wide open spaces, room to make her big mistakes. She needs.
That was a little bit of Susan Gibson doing Wide Open Spaces. You may know that song by the Gypsy Chicks. He wrote it for them. She'll be one of the performers at the Women's Music Festival this coming Saturday. It's a very music weekend in Houston. On Sunday, there's another music event for Bear Artists, B-E-A-A Artists. And last February, on my show Queer Music Heritage, I did a special on Bear Music, and the internet version of it was 6 hours. There were that many artists. It celebrated the music of bear-identified musicians. The tour is coming through Houston this Sunday, and I'm going to interview the founder of the tour, Shannon Grady. Before we bring him on, I want to share a medley of five of the artists that will be performing this Sunday night. Stay tuned for that.
Thank you.
dream was a big red brick church with lots of concrete. There were stairs that rose high above the street when we were kids. Singing words of poetry, returning to my mind, trying to remember the half-forgotten lines. Words of common verbiage, woven into lace. The words speak of the poet, the poem reveals his face. And the poet writes the music, the singer sings the rhyme, and the beating of their heart resounds in perfect time. Shook his head real hard. I met a preacher on the highway in a caravan of cars. Seems it happens every day, things get turned around. The broken spoke just keeps on turning into another town. But I'm alright, cause I feel like this might be the right thing. Cause I'm feeling alive. He took a couple of tanks of gas to make it to Alabama. It took a little more time than I had planned. I made it through a haze of days where I could hardly stand up. But my daddy said that it would make me a better man. But I'm color of the sky against your eyes. Do anything just to have you. And it feels no matter how I try, I just can't get it right. And I
me up and beat me like you know you should. And when you're gonna miss you so much, I gotta tell you that I jones for your touch. And I don't ever wanna throw it away, cause we're just so happy and gay. Love, where it really blows your mind. Love, where it sneaks up from behind, gets you from the rear, your heart with cheer. I can you hear me loud and clear when I tell you that ain't love. A kooky and gay in a real cool way. Ain't love queer.
Ain't
And Ain't Love Queer, that was Kendall, preceded by Elijah Black, preceded by Nukia, Matthew Temple, and Shannon Grady. And we've got Shannon Grady talking to us about the Bears on the Run tour. Shannon, you there?
Hello.
Welcome to Queer Voices.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
That was a little bit of a challenge of putting together a collage of those artists because the music was so varied.
Right. I think you did a great job, though.
Thank you. I wanted to get across the variety in the music and some of the, I guess, the different things, different styles people might be hearing this coming Sunday night.
Yeah, I think, that just shows exactly what our styles are. We, probably Matthew and Elijah and myself, are more similar, and Nakia as well, and then we have Babalu, the comedian, and he will be performing with us, and then Kendall. So Kendall's kind of more out there than we are, I guess.
To say the least, yes.
But, and then, so it should be a really great show. I'm really excited. A bunch of us were at Sawmill as part of Bearpalooza, and so we got together and talked about the tour, and we're very excited to come to the cities, each city, and just show the Bear community, you know, another side of the Bear community and the music side of us and everything like that. So
I think this is the first Bear artist tour, isn't it?
I think so. And I was really surprised when, like, 6 months ago, I think, I called up, you know, all the guys, and I said, hey, let's go on tour, and nobody had ever heard of doing that before, and we just, you know, kept calling places and trying to book the shows, and we just kept at it, and between me and Babalu, you know, and with the guys helping here and there, we pretty much did all this on our own, and, you know, we got a couple sponsors to help us out, but other than that, we've pretty much a grassroots tour, and we're very excited about it.
And something like 12 cities and 7 states?
Yeah.
And
seven states.
And it starts out in Texas.
Yep, we start in Dallas, Texas on the 19th, so just a few days, and I'm right now in Minneapolis, freezing, and I'm ready to get down in the south and warm up a little bit. So
you've got Dallas, Austin, Houston in the same weekend, pretty much.
Yep. And then we head over to Atlanta for the next weekend, starting the next weekend, and then just go straight up through Tennessee, Ohio, and then we head over to Chicago, and then come straight down through St. Louis, Tulsa, and then we end in Wichita. Which was really nice. We booked 11 shows ourselves, and then after the word got out, Wichita actually came to us and asked us if we would perform there. So that was really nice.
Are you going to pick up local artists in these different cities to join you?
Actually, in Cincinnati, in Cleveland, and in Chicago, we have 3 different local guys that will be opening up for the tour. So we wanted to try to get the local people involved as much as possible too, and so we got a couple.
Mm-hmm. Are you doing that in Texas as well, or
no, because there's 6 of us in Texas.
Okay.
So actually Nakia had scheduling conflicts with us, so he's only doing the 3 shows in Texas, and then he'll stay back in Texas, and then we move on forward, and that's why we got a couple people to open up the show for us. So we're very excited about that.
So you just kind of pretty much, you were at a Bearpalooza event, and you just said, let's do a tour.
Well, you know, I went to Freddie Freeman does the Bearpalooza, and I went to the Sawmill last year, and I came home, and I'm like, you know, I have this brand new CD out, and I know these other guys have CDs out, and Bearpalooza is only once or twice a year. I was like, we have to find a way to, you know, get this out to more people, and I just I just called up Matthew Temple and I called up Babalu and I said, are you guys interested in doing a 2-week tour? At that time we were just like, let's go for 2 weeks and see what happens. And they were in, and I called up Elijah and Kendall and they were in as well. And so we all just started calling everybody we know. I spent hours on the phone for the first couple of months.
Do y'all back everybody. Each other up when you're singing? Because some of the, when I had the CDs for most of y'all, and it sounded like there are bands playing, but there's six of you on tour.
Right.
So you help each other during the different sets?
Yeah, we've been talking about that, and when we were in Sawmill, we actually performed, because four of us were there, so we actually played on each other's songs, and so we'll be doing that on tour as well, just helping each other out, playing backup guitar, you know, rhythm guitar, or singing background vocals, just whatever the main person wants, pretty much. So we're all ready, you know, we're just ready to help each other out and just try to sound as best as everyone can. So,
and you know, I've heard all of these artists and they are all excellent, and I'm looking forward to this. I've been kind of keeping people in suspense with the details. Now that I got them interested, it'll be this Sunday, that's the 21st, at 7 p.m. at Tony's Corner Pocket, 817 West Dallas. Some people may remember that location is where Keys West was, which was a piano bar. Now it's Tony's Corner Pocket for the last year. It's a good venue for that. There's ample parking. Again, it's at 7 p.m. You can find out about it at bearsontherun.com. And also, you might want to check out the HoustonAreaBears.com website. They are, I believe, heavily involved in this event, too.
Yes.
We are running out of time. We got time for one more song by one of the artists. We're going to close with Nukia. He's got a brand new EP out, which I quite like. And you're listening to Queer Voices.
You ain't got no job, you ain't got no car, you ain't got no food, 'cause you ain't got no spark. You ain't got no say, if you ain't got no count, you ain't got no money, so you ain't got no clout. Oh, ain't love when you've been playing.
That was Nakia, spelled N-A-K-I-A, one of the artists performing at Bears on the Run this Sunday. That's bearsontherun.com.
This is Queer Voices.
A spark from you, it could light a million candles in my heart. My heart, it aches to always be with you, with you. In my life, my life. For you, I'm here. For you, for life. But why, oh why, oh why, should we be together? Why, oh why, stop us from being together? Oh, me.
You're listening to Red Haired Girl, the title track from the latest album by Scottish musician Horse. She's been around for a good 30 years, but the new CD marks her American debut. This way, our correspondent Dixie Trico called Horse at her home in Scotland to learn more about the openly lesbian performer's passionate poetry and moody music.
Tell us how you got started and how your career has developed up until now.
To do that in a very short space of time would be very hard, I suppose. I've sung since I was tiny and loved music since I was small, and I've been singing a long time. You mentioned that I was out. I've never actually been in to come out. I've always been who I am and allowed myself to be. And music was a way of allowing myself to search and explore and be able to be out. My music rescued me, and I would say in some respect. So it's a very fiery and important thing in my life, being able to perform and be able to sing, and it certainly gave me a focus and something to aim for.
When you were growing up, were there other kids who you knew were LGBT?
I had a really uncomfortable teenage years. I was attacked and chased and all sorts of unpleasant things like that. I lived in a small town, and there were other gay people but who were fairly closeted, but I was mercilessly attacked and pointed at in the street. So the music, therefore, came out of me as a way of, you know, an escape route.
How has your style changed, the way you approach the music?
I think the thing about the way I approach it is that I'm as hungry as I ever was. With maturity, I've become hungrier to have as many people access my music. Probably because I was gay and because I was quite androgynous. There was no KD Lang when I was doing my stuff. You know, there was people didn't know how to deal with me. There had been Annie Lennox, but Annie could obviously just go back to being a heterosexual female, totally acceptable and very feminine, and everybody would be quite happy with that. But I couldn't go back to that because I was never that. I was always quite androgynous. So I suppose the difference now is that I don't really give two hoot about what people think. I've just let myself be, and the music still comes from my soul. I feel like all these years I've been working a way out, and you know, I'm not Elton John, I'm not George Michael, I'm not someone who's had major international success then come out. I've been out, and therefore I suspect that part of my lack of support from the music industry and possibly peers is because I'm out. I would like people to sort of appreciate possibly a lot of the stuff that I've had to go through to be where I am now.
Yeah.
people think of music and they try to put it in a rock box or a pop box or a rap box. My music, and a lot of good music, dare I say, doesn't belong in a specific box. And people don't always belong in specific boxes. They hear the name Horse, they go, what on earth? Who on earth? They can't imagine the kind of music. And even when you hear the record, it doesn't quite capture what I perhaps do live, because I don't even know myself. But I tend to touch people. I reach out to people and I perform because I want them to like the music. And I think a lot of artists don't tend to do that. They're one-dimensional.
Some of the people that you've worked with, from Tina Turner to Erasure, what a wide range.
These are people I've actually opened and done some touring with. It's a great honour to be able to open for an artist as stunning as Tina Turner. The immense power that she unleashes. Something comes up from her. I think there's a part of myself like that, that I let something out and it just completely takes me over.
You mentioned you did some work with orchestras.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to say that the music has a history of strings, and I think some of the best music actually involves strings. One concert I did was with the Scottish Chamber Orchestra, and it was all of my music. I actually recorded that, so that's an album as well, called Both Sides. But I can do anything from stand up and sing a cappella solo, or I can do full orchestra. The largest ensemble, shall we say, was the Scottish Symphony Orchestra plus the band, and that was just unbelievably exciting. So there's about 90 of us on the stage all together. It was such a great sound. There's never any one format. I suppose the one I feel most comfortable is with the band, you know, about maybe 6 or 7 of us. But it's really exciting. I feel like part of a family, you know. I write all of the music. I start with the music and then I do the lyrics, or I might have a co-writer, depending. If people could just realise that the record's out there and seek it out, I would love to hear what people think. Horse is both strong and soft at the same time, and that to me is more who I am and what I'm about.
Horse's new Cosmic Music CD is called Red Haired Girl. She was interviewed by This Way Out's Dixie Trichel. You can find out more about her music online at www.randan.org. That's RANDAN.org.
Hi, I'm Margaret Cho.
Hello, this is Edmund Wyatt.
Hi, I'm comedian Bob Smith.
Hi, I'm Kate Quinton.
Hello, I'm Armistead Maupin.
Hi, I'm Clive Barker.
This is Judy Shepard.
Hello, I'm Scott Thompson.
Hi, I'm David Sedaris.
Hi, this is Jeff Straker.
Hi, this is Chastity Bono, and you're listening to
This Way Out.
This Way Out?
This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine.
Being queer in Salt Lake City is different than being queer in San Francisco, just like there's a difference between LGBT life in Tehran and Beirut. Travel writer Michael Luongo's Gay Travels in the Muslim World explores the complexity and diversity of that part of the planet, and he recently shared some of his findings with This Way Out's Steve Pride.
In May of 2001, 52 gay Egyptians were arrested in a floating nightclub. Last month, speaking at Columbia University, the president of Iran claimed there were no gays in his country. In Iraq, Shiite death squads regularly target gay men for murder. So while not an obvious gay tourist destination, is the Middle East somewhere you should travel without your National Guard unit?
My name is Michael Luongo. I'm the author of the book Gay Travels in the Muslim World. I've done a lot of travel through the Middle East even before 9/11, but since 9/11, I think homosexuality has been kind of wrapped up in a lot of the issues, both with the war and even with the attack on the towers themselves. So I decided to do an anthology looking at men from Muslim regions and men who've traveled to them.
It's important to remember when traveling that our gaydar is usually calibrated to Western stereotypes and norms, and won't always work away from home.
There's a lot of things within Muslim regions that might throw off your gaydar. Men hold hands, men hold stares with you, men are much more touchy. Things that might indicate that they're gay here. However, it's just that it's a culture that's very male on male, and because there is really not the sense of gay, men can bond in ways that they can't here in the United States.
It's a mistake to assume the Muslim world is monolithic, and to not acknowledge the differences between cultural attitudes, penal codes, and Islamic law.
The Muslim world is an enormous region. It stretches from the west coast of Africa all the way to Malaysia and Indonesia. I mean, it's an enormous part of the world. One of the things that I throw back to people whenever they say, oh, well, what is it like in the Muslim world? I tell them, well, what is it like in the Christian world? Kansas is part of the Christian world, but then so is Denmark, so is Sweden, so is Spain, so is Brazil. These are enormous areas with enormous differences. It's the same with the Muslim regions. In terms of Islamic law or Sharia law, in some places it is rather well enforced, such as in Egypt. Unfortunately, we know about the problem with the Cairo 52. Israel, if you consider that to a degree to be a Muslim country, is a little more liberal, even though it's technically the Jewish state. It has a large Muslim population. Countries like Jordan, or even countries like Turkey, or countries like Lebanon are a little more liberal, but on paper, countries like Lebanon actually have laws against homosexuality, but tend to be more liberal on it.
Of the many places mentioned in the book, which is Michael's favorite travel destination?
I actually enjoyed traveling as a gay man through Afghanistan. I think it's an oddly gay-friendly place, because homosexuality sort of just kind of embedded within the culture. Not gay per se, but homosexuality. And there's a difference between behavior and identity. Turkey would be a very easy place, I think, to live in. Again, there are problems there as the country continues to modernize, and yet also Islamic politics get into power. And also perhaps Jordan or perhaps Lebanon. Lebanon has, Beirut in particular, has quite a developed infrastructure.
And what about the adage, it's a nice place to visit, but I wouldn't want to live there?
I do a lot of presentations for this book, and I do explain it's very different for me versus somebody from there. Again, the behavior is not a problem. It's the identity as gay and claiming civil rights or wanting to claim civil rights. If you're a tourist, if you're a Westerner, you come and go and you leave, or you're not even really of the country, so you're this sort of stranger and you can almost do what you want. But remember that there are people that you're dealing with who have to then deal with the consequences. That was the problem with the Cairo 52. Anyone who was a foreign national, they were released. It was only the Egyptians who had the problem.
What do you want the readers to take away from the book?
The nuanced nature of the Middle East and the Muslim regions, that behavior does not mean identity in the sense that it does in the Western sense. Men will have sex with men, but they don't necessarily identify as gay. There are many men who do identify as gay. The other thing that I want people to take away is, while it's easy for us as Westerners to visit these countries, it can be very difficult for people there. And one of the things I've had discussions with some people who are apologists for governments that kill people who are seeking gay civil rights is that, you know, people, even though it's technically, or some people might say, against the culture, people deserve civil rights no matter how they identify. So that's something that I also want people to take away. And also that even in war, because we describe Iraq, we describe Afghanistan, you know, people are living and breathing and dying and loving, and they're much more nuanced than anything that you see in the news. The other thing is, when we visit these places, we look at these things through Western eyes, and we describe something as gay. But it's not gay to them. The same with the holding hands, the same with the, you know, men touching. It's this broad spectrum of behavior. It's much more nuanced.
Michael Luongo, reading from the preface to his book, Gay Travels in the Muslim World.
I was raised in an America that taught me to hate Muslims. When I was in grade school, I was shown pictures of dead Israeli babies blown up by terrorists and told, this is what Muslims do. Vanessa Redgrave was vilified in the same classrooms as the very example of evil for supporting the Palestine Liberation Organization, and Arafat performed their horrific deeds. Beyond these unofficial injections by teachers of their opinions into the curriculum, there was, of course, the photograph of Malcolm X in our history books, a black Muslim whom we were taught professed violence against whites. He was contrasted against the peace-loving and obviously very Christian Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. The photographs and explanations of the differences between these two civil rights leaders, made clear by their religious affiliations, only served to justify the words of my teachers in the minds of us pliable young students. Certainly, the white ethnic makeup of my neighborhood, largely Jews and Catholics, played a huge role in this curriculum. The conservative and prejudiced Italians and Irish might have finally reached their long-sought professional nirvana, but all still felt the sting of their sordid working-class upbringings, which lurked precariously around the corner from furnitureless houses bought overextended credit. they needed an enemy. Jewish playmates in the neighborhood always had visits from Brooklyn-based grandparents who survived the Holocaust. Everyone had cousins and uncles and aunts living on kibbutzim, eking out a living in a fragile Israel little more than 3 decades old. Swords weren't beaten into plowshares there, though. The two were worshipped side by side. Living rooms were adorned with photographs of relatives who had guns in one hand, farm implements in the other. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict, the oil embargo, the Iran hostage crisis, all of these issues were alive and well in my classroom and in my neighborhood, with Arabs and Muslims the enemy all around, no matter whether we were Jews or Catholics. The indoctrination of this philosophy, the idea that these people of the desert lived in mysterious and evil ways, was part of the curriculum in my grade school. We were taught that these people who ran around with rags on their heads were a dangerous threat to our American way of life. This was a world and a people I had never met and had no way of knowing other than through the images in my teacher's hand, the messages in her voice, and the words on the blackboard and in our school books that were reified by the images at home and on television. And I grew up not in a backward place, but in suburban New Jersey, a short ride from Manhattan, the most diverse place in all of the world. Yet, on matters Muslim, there seemed little in the way of understanding. Between school and television and community, there was no way when I was a child to like or understand the truth of what a Muslim was.
This has been a conversation with Michael Luongo, editor of Gay Travels in the Muslim World. This is Steve Pride. Thanks for listening.
Oh, I come from a land, from a faraway place, where the caravan camels roam.
Thanks for tuning into This Way Out, the international gay and lesbian radio magazine. This week, Tanya Kane Perry, Christopher Gall, Rex Walkner with Bill Kelly, Graham Underhill, Dixie Trichel, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Horse performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Listen online to This Way Out anytime and exclusively at outinamerica.com. You can also get there by clicking on the link at the top of our website, thiswayout.org. Most This Way Out operating expenses are supported by direct, tax-deductible donations from you, our listeners. Thank you. Log on to thiswayout.org to see how you can help keep us on the air. Email us at tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening. On WNRB, Wausau, Wisconsin, KHEN, Salida, Colorado, Planet FM, Auckland, New Zealand, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. And we're all going to stay tuned.
This Way Out is heard every week as part of Queer Voices. You are listening to 90.1 FM KPFT.
Anymore. These walls are closing in. Been waiting all day for the night to begin. Lack of activity has taken its toll. The music's calling, gotta get up and go.
To get away, I need to go out. Just gotta get up and start moving around. No need to sit here and waste my time. No sense in staying, I'm going out tonight.
more nights sitting in the dark. I wanna be there when the music starts. So baby, take me with you. You know the place I wanna go. I wanna go. I wanna go. Go where the music stops and the crowd is hot. I wanna be in the middle of you know the spot. I'm gonna leave reality at the door. That's what I'm looking for. No more nights sitting in the dark.
In the dark.
You know the place I wanna go.
I wanna go.
I wanna go.
Yeah.
The music's up and the crowd is up. I'm gonna be in the middle of you. I'm gonna leave reality at the door.
I'm gonna leave.
That's what I'm looking for.
That's what I'm looking for. Alright, alright.
You know the place I wanna go.
Yeah.
I wanna go.
The music's
up and the crowd is up.
Again, was Alan Lett, L-E-T-T, from his new album, A Moment Away, with the guest vocals by Josh Duffy.
This is Queer Voices.
And we're back.
We are back. I was looking at, well, first we ought to thank this week's guest.
Certainly. We'll start off with Michael McGura, who is with the GLBT Behavioral Health and Wellness Coalition, which is hosting a town hall meeting this Thursday from 6:30 to 9 at the Montrose Counseling Center. And if you RSVP, a light dinner will be provided. You can contact Michael at mwmigura@yahoo.com.
Also, you talked to the Go Girls.
Yeah, Madeline Sklar and Shalice Shuttlesworth about the event coming up November 3rd at the Last Concert Cafe to benefit Friends for Life.
I had a short conversation with Wayne Beeson and his book about the ex-gay movement.
We'll have to have him on again.
Yes, because he has another book out.
Yeah. And J.D.?
We interviewed the folks from the movie Theft, and that's Thursday at the River Oaks Theater, a benefit for Pride. After that, I talked to Shannon Grady from the Bears on the Run Tour. That'll be this Sunday, 7 p.m. at Tony's Corner Pocket. You're probably wondering about Queer Music Heritage next week. It's on Queer Blues, taking blues from 1925 up to 1970, digging really deep this time.
And also we'll be talking about Galveston Gay Pride Fest, which happens, is it next weekend?
The 27th and 20, I think it's like 26th, 27th and 28th.
Yeah, not this weekend, next weekend. So that sounds exciting.
And we start our fun drive.
And that's
next exciting. Week. Next week.
Yes, yeah, so get ready on October 22nd to support Queer Voices and the other fine programming here on KPFT.
Houston.
And thank you for listening to Queer Voices. Join us again next Monday night. Good night, Glenn.
You have been listening to Queer Voices, heard each Monday at 8 p.m. here on KPFT, a publicly funded Pacifica Network station. Queer Voices is produced live in Houston with recorded segments from This Way Out, which is produced at KPFK in Los Angeles. Queer Voices executive producer is Jack Valensky. On-air voices are Glenn Holt, J.D. Doyle, Deborah Bell, Jennifer Renee, Greg Chapman, and Jack Valensky. Be sure to listen every Saturday night, Sunday morning at 1 a.m. for After Hours with Jimmy Carper. It's Queer Radio with Attitude. This is listener-sponsored and commercial-free Pacifica Radio, KPFT, at 90.1 FM, 89.5 FM Galveston, and worldwide via streaming audio from kpft.org. For Queer Voices, I'm Glenn Holt.
Pacifica Foundation, the parent organization of this station, is now holding elections to seat boards of directors in each of the foundation's 5 signal areas. Our governance model is unique. Pacifica's listeners and volunteers compose our local and national boards of directors. Our voting system is also unique. This format, called single transferable voting, is a voting system in which voters each have one vote but rank candidates in order of choice. In a single transferable vote election, candidates must achieve a threshold of first choice votes to win. For those without an overall majority of first choices, candidates with the fewest votes are eliminated one by one. Ballots cast for those candidates are then recounted for the next choice candidate until the winner achieves a majority among remaining candidates. With single transferable voting, voters have the power to rank candidates by choice rather than simply choosing a single candidate. For more information about single transferable voting,
the free program you just heard was paid for by the listener members of KPFT Houston. If you're not already a KPFT member, we encourage you to join with us in keeping free speech alive by becoming one. Basic membership is still $35 a year. You don't have to, but you'll feel better. Thanks for listening.